Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Don't sweat the technique.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Back on the Bees. Someone said the Cavs are beating the Celtics this year. Okay, well, you know what? I can't say you're wrong, because I think the Cavs have done a really nice job. And as much as I loved J.B. Bickerstaff, having worked with him with the Rockets, and I thought he did a hell of a job last year, I'm also very proud of the fact that Kenny Atkinson, in his first year, has taken the Cavs to another level, and trading for Hunter has made them an even better team that gets them deeper, that gives them a better chance to beat the deepest team in the league, in the Celtics. But before we go any further, Barry, I'd like to do a little kind of follow along with Joel moment. Today's Friday. It's not Friday the 13th. Today is Friday the 14th, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't have any bad luck or anything like that, right?
Right.
But if you would go with me on a walk down memory lane going forward, I mean, walk into the future.
Okay.
That would make Saturday the 15th, right?
Right.
Which would consequently make Sunday the 16th, right?
Okay.
So if Monday is March the 17th, what would Monday be, Barry?
Well, I believe that would be the day when we would all don our green gear.
Yes!
Go out to the pubs and the clubs and the bars
and the drinking establishments,
Kobo. Such as Kobo, drink green beer, pinch each other.
So Monday's St. Patrick's Day.
Oh,
not just my St. Patrick's Day.
Didn't
BMAC say it was Tuesday?
I believe that's. I believe that's what I heard. Yeah.
Okay. So everybody's playing for second for car wreck of the day.
Is that? Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Now that we got that off my chest,
I noticed he took his headphones.
Yeah,
off.
Yeah, he did. He doesn't want any part of this.
He doesn't want to hear.
I can hear you. I'm waiting to the point where this matters.
Well, it matters because you corrected me, basically put me in my place.
Oh, okay, it's Tuesday. Cool.
Yeah. There you go. All right. So, yeah, look, I think you and I were talking about it during the break. Someone texted in and said, would the Rockets trade for Ja Morant? I think the biggest thing to me is, of the landscape, I've been harping on the fact that, look, I want a guy that's kind of fits the rest of the culture of the Rockets. I think you're going to get rid of Fred VanVleet. You can get rid of him as soon as at the end of the season. Even if he wants to stay, I'm not going to pay him a lot of money, and he's going to probably take a bench role. Dylan Brooks is overpaid for 2 more years. But he does what he's supposed to do for now. But you're going to have more money, so that veteran will probably go away too. I don't want Kevin Durant at 35. Ja Morant, at least for his age, with his ability, fits in with the rest of the young guys in this nucleus. I don't know what you'd have to give up to get him. But because I don't believe as Booker being a number one go-to guy. But to your point, I think that to beat some of the teams that you're talking about in the NBA right now, you need 2 stars to say the least, and maybe 3. And just having a Kevin Durant and the rest of the Jacksons, if he's Michael, isn't enough. So I think at least with a Ja Morant, he would blend and fit in with the guys that you already have. I just don't know how much you'd have to give up to get him.
Probably a lot, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even with all his drama and baggage and everything else, he's still one of the
elite.
Yeah, he's still one of the elites, one of the best, so... It's just been so quiet, right?
Yeah.
Ever since he went away and, you know, he's back now, but it's just been, it's been so quiet. You haven't heard anything, which is good, though. You know what I mean? It's good for him that it's been so quiet, but I don't know.
See, that's where you also, you walk the fine line of if Tim McMahon's right and Tillman truly is looking at trying to find that guy, don't swing and miss on that guy, right? Because if Ja truly is more trouble than he's worth, or just is never going to get there, kind of like you already have with Jalen Green, are you, if Jalen's in the trade, that's one thing. If Jalen's not, are you really putting even more stock in two guys that may never get there for you?
Well, he's got what? How many years does he have left on his deal?
He and Zion came in on at the same year, in the same year. And Zion's already re-upped. Yeah. So I believe that he did too. Because Memphis is in a situation where they got to lock up every guy that's playing for them because they're a small market.
Man, I just went to Memphis's homepage on ESPN. He's not even leading them in scoring.
No, it's Bane, isn't it?
No, Jaren Jackson.
Oh, and Jaren Jackson, yeah.
Yeah.
But again, so you brought up OKC, and I always say that's the model if you're going to rebuild a franchise, right? But it's also
all you need is 8,000 draft picks.
But yeah, but Sam Presti did it to a level that not many teams can get to, right? No. And he also hit on just about every pick.
Yeah.
On the flip side, the two teams that I think swung and missed trying to do the exact same thing would be Memphis and would be, even to a greater extent, the Pelicans. Because Zion bombs, you swing and miss on a guy, and you re-upped him at a massive amount of money, and you don't even know when he's going to play. You know he's got the off-the-court drama. And from a Memphis perspective, you got good, very similar to the Rockets. You drafted well enough to get good players like Bane, like Jaren Jackson, like John Morant. But it's almost like the Jalen Green situation, and to some extent, Şengün, where you're wondering, but are they ever going to be great?
Right. They're good.
Yeah. Well, are they ever going to be great?
Uh-huh.
And that's where I think it gets dicey.
Yeah, that's the question, man. That's the million-dollar question. I love LP. Will he ever be great?
Now, with two stars, he doesn't have to be. But if you're relying on him to be one of those stars, then he has to be, and that makes it dicey.
Yeah.
So,
and I wonder if one of those stars ever, or having a superstar elevates him, right? Because putting it this way, is Pippen ever Pippen without Jordan?
I don't think so. I've been very critical of that.
So that's the thing. Could LP become a Pippen? Because Pippen made when the NBA did the 50 greatest of all time, Pippen was on that list.
Scotty loves him some Scotty, but I think outside of that, Jordan, yeah, I've said that for years.
Yeah.
Amen to you for saying it too, because a lot of people think I'm nuts, and no. I just think you saw the Bulls without Michael, and Scotty pouted, and Scotty didn't have it.
Yeah, well, you saw Scotty without Michael, you know? He kept playing. You saw the Bulls without Michael. You saw Scotty without Michael. You saw Scotty at other teams. That would be interesting to see, though. Like, what if you got LP with a legit, like if LP played with LeBron
or inside outside with presence,
yeah, or just a superstar, how would that elevate his game? That would be fun to see. That would be fun to watch because, man, I love his game. Just even watching this morning, I was trying to catch up on some games, and that just the little stuff that he does. You know, there was the game, it was the Orlando game. Steven Adams misses a free throw. The rebound, and then the no-look pass to Tari Eason.
Oh, the no-look was unbelievable. Oh,
just stuff
maybe the play of the year for the Rockets.
Stuff like that. It's just a rebound and a missed free throw, but it's a no-look pass because the defense collapses on him. Bro, that just goes down as a sweet little pass, but that's some stuff that you can't teach. That's instinctual, and that's what makes LP so great to me.
Yeah, no doubt. So, look, I think that regardless of what happens, it's all icing on the cake in the fact that the Rockets have this really good I would pad the brakes a little bit. Instead of trying to punch the gas and look for that desperate move to get that superstar, just kind of let them keep developing.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to make the success. I still
Ceiling
believe they've
the
made
roof.
The decision too quick to give the money to LP and to Jalen Green more specifically. But at the same time, you could still live through that. But don't start trying to worry about peddling off some of these young guys before you know what they truly can be. The same way I'm passionate about Cam Whitmore, I don't want you to peddle off some of the other guys like Reed Shepard, like even a Jabari to some people, like other guys to where you go, yeah, we're just going to throw them in a trade now to try and get 2 years of Kevin Durant and then realize, hey, they could turn into something far better for you. Not saying better than Kevin Durant, but a 35-year-old Kevin Durant for 2 years as opposed to 5 or 6 years of these guys.
I bring it up all the time, and you're right. I mean, in the NBA, the Thunder have shown you how to do it, right? The Warriors were the blueprint before on how to do it, and now it's kind of the Thunder showing you how to do it. But if you're looking at how to do a rebuild here kind of locally, man, do what the Astros did. And they're, you know, it was you draft well, which they've kind of done. They've drafted some fantastic talent. They're not all going to be Altuves necessarily, but you've gone out and built up a pretty nice roster with some pretty fantastic depth, if you think about it. Up and down that lineup, it's a pretty damn good roster. And I heard, what's the dude's name that does play-by-play with
Craig?
Not Craig, with the other dude.
Ryan Hollins?
Yeah. He said that the Rockets were the deepest team in the league.
Not even close.
I wanted to flip my couch. But they do have a lot of talent, but they're not the deepest team in the league. But, you know, now do what the Astros did once they had good drafts, and that was bring in some veteran talent. That's the Fred Van Vliet's. And then I'm waiting on them to do the next step, which is go out and get their JV and win their championship.
Yeah. So it'll be – I mean, it's going to be real interesting to see what they do and how they handle it, because I think that the next positive step for this franchise is to get these young guys some experience in the playoffs. We know the Steven Adams and the Fred Van Vliet's of the world and Dylan Brooks have done it.
Yeah.
You got to get the other guys' feet wet to understand what they can truly be. Oh, boy. Brian, want to get the call before we get to DJ?
No, let's go to DJ.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with DJ Bienemy. We're going to get into some Texans talk. So don't go anywhere. It is the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Back without Branham today as he's on Coug duty. So my good friend Barry Laminack with me.
Our beloved Cougs.
Wow. No. BMAC here as well, and friend of the show and frequent guest during the season, DJ Bienemy, the beat writer for your Houston Texans for ESPN, joins us now. And DJ, a lot going on with the Texans since we entered into the whole land of free agency. And I know that you have been very active, so I wanted to get you on because of some of your tweets and your commentary after the moves that they've already made were made. But your thoughts so far on what has been, I guess, centered around the offensive line and the reshuffling of three members of it since we last talked to you.
Yeah, I mean, I can't honestly say from a talent perspective they upgrade at the O-line room. I think we'd be lying if we said that. They obviously moved off one of the best left tackles in the league. They're obviously apparently reportedly going to move Titus to left tackle, keep Blake at right tackle, which is fine. They brought in Langdon Tomlinson, who is good to be 13 in 3 years. He's older. He is durable. We'll give him that. He's very durable. But he's going to be on 13 in 3 years, and the advanced stats from next-gen stats were not kind to him. And they traded for Ed Ingram, who got benched last year. They were able to turn Kenyon Green into Johnson. But, again, you know, I can't sit here and honestly say right now the O-line room is better than what it was at the end of last season, because you got rid of one of the best left tackles in the league, and who did you replace him with? With Titus, who hasn't played left tackle since it's been a minute since he's played left tackle full time. So for me, I'd be lying. If you look at all the advanced metrics, Tomlinson was one of the worst guards in the league last year. Like, he had all the advanced metrics. He allowed 11 sacks, coordination stats. He allowed a pressure rate of, I believe, 9 or 10, which regardless was towards the top amongst left guards with at least 300 pass blocking snaps. So, you know, if you think the scheme alone is going to elevate them, cool. But scheme can only take you so far. Then at the end of the day, you still need talent. And again, he's older. The Ed Ingram move is whatever to me, because that's more for depth. That's more for depth. I don't think he's competing to be a starter.
But right, DJ, here's my thing, because I'm with you, right? But my thing is then, what's next? Because if they knew way before we would know, but if they knew they were going to move on from Laremy Tunsil, wouldn't you do it before free agency started so that you could at least have a conversation with some of the better available left tackles and or guards in this league if you truly were looking to upgrade or change, as opposed to when they did it and now since then, subsequently, where they really haven't done anything to where you'd go, oh, that's why they did what they did. And then the follow-up on that would be, so am I to assume that they're just going to put it all towards the draft now, towards the offensive line?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're going to go draft heavy. I do think you make a very fair point in that they probably should have moved him before the draft, not before the draft, but before free agency. So then, as you said, they would be able to, you know, possibly then be in on some of the better guards and tackles that were going to be available, and get that money off your books. Obviously, to be fair to them, they didn't move him Monday. So they still could have been in on those guys. But I get what you're saying, right? You move a little bit earlier, you can be a little bit ahead, especially you can talk to people at the combine and, you know, work those backdoor channels. So I think you're correct in that aspect. I think they're going to go heavy in the draft. You know, it is what it is. Like, you know, this unit to me is – I'm just concerned that we went into the offseason knowing what they had to do to improve. And right now it feels either the same or worse on offense. You know what I mean? Like I do think, you know, the Christian Kirk move is good, but he hasn't finished the last two seasons. I think, yeah, but I think he's solid. But again, like, in the AFC, when you look at some of the weapons in the AFC, where does Nico and Christian Kirk match up in the AFC? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a bunch of duos. You're taking over that. Even though Nico is probably better than, you know, a lot of the one piece on a lot of these teams. But, you know, the second part of the duo, you know, some of the teams are better than twos than Christian Kirk. Especially if you include a tight end, like you go to Baltimore, like Zay Flowers, Mark Andrews. I like that duo over Nico and Christian Kirk, or Miami. Obviously, I don't have to go in depth, or Cincinnati, or Kansas City, or, I mean, maybe Buffalo. You know, I could say take that duo over what Buffalo got. But overall, though, man, I you know, when it comes to O-line, like, when you do want to win when it matters, your O-line got to be, like, stout. Everybody that made it deep into the playoffs last year, or, you know, able to really compete for a championship, all had a stout O-line. And I just don't think that we can say objectively right now. Now, a lot can change.
Right.
You know, maybe they can surprise us in training camp, or maybe they can add some players in the draft that hit the ground running. But as of right now, this is not a spot offensive line.
Hey, DJ, Barry Lamanic here. First of all, I do want to say, yeah, I wouldn't say the Chiefs actually had a really good O-line, and they made it pretty deep. But wouldn't you say there's something to addition by subtraction when it comes to this O-line? I mean, this was not a good O-line at all, and Kenyon Green was actually the second worst-rated guard in football after his performance last season. So even if you – as long as you didn't get the worst-rated guard in football, you got better if you replaced him with somebody else. So I think addition by subtraction, just by getting him out of that room, made the O-line better. And I get losing Laremy Tunsil is a big deal, but – I forget who it was that I saw on social media, but there has to be a reason, right? And I don't know if it was attitude, if it was there was a, you know, something going on in the locker room, but there has to be a plan. This is wild for me to say this, but I have faith in Nick Caserio and this front office now. Am I crazy? Tell me if I'm crazy. But there's got to be something behind the scenes we don't know that they know.
Right, so I would say to the first part of your question about, you know, addition by subtraction, if the goal is to just get better than Kenyon Green, mission accomplished. If the goal is to win the Super Bowl, mission not accomplished. That's my first response to that. On the second part, like, okay, you get rid of Kenyon Green. Cool. You brought in Lincoln Thomason, who has – it's been 13 in 3 years, whose advanced metrics were in a similar ballpark. Like, a lot of people said that Seattle Seahawks had one of the worst offensive lines last year, and he was a part of that, you know? talking, and then not going to Laramie. It was more about cap reasons. You know, I had a guy in the building tell me it was more about they got to get ready to pay Stingley, CJ, and Will, you know, specifically next year. Me, I would have held on to him for one more year. But, you know, Nick does come from the New England tree where you move on 1 year early versus 1 year late. So I understand that. That's it. So I'm not going to really knock Nick for making that move. When it comes to having faith in them, I think you can have faith in them at every position except, ironically, the O-line. I think the only year where, like, the O-line was solid was 2023. But 2022, the O-line was okay. They just took a beating. Obviously, 2021, I won't hold that against them. And obviously, last year, that was one of the most expensive asset-filled offensive units in the entire NFL. And they were quite literally one of the worst units in the NFL. So, but, you know, I will attach some of that to coaching. I'm not going to put that all on the players. The players did need to be better, but some of that was coaching, which is why Chris Schroster is not here anymore, and which is why Bobby Stillers is no longer here. So, you know, I'm going to give this entire group a clean slate-ish. I'm obviously view it through a lens of skepticism, but I'm not going to say, like, they're doomed, right? I want to at least get to training camp and see how they look in training camp, because if they look good in training camp against that defensive line, then there you have it, you know? You'll have a good unit.
DJ, I got a question for you because of the fact that, look, I trust you more than just about anybody, especially on the Texans, and you and I have some good conversations. And I saw when you were talking about when everybody was questioning the culture, and we've seen some of the other reports that have come out, and you were quick to basically dispel that and say, hey, look, it wasn't – everybody seemed to like Laramie. But the difference for me is being around, obviously in different situations and settings, but being around professional locker rooms. You could have a guy that's a great dude that everybody in the locker room likes, but if he ain't doing it the way the coaches want it, and or whether that relates to practices and meetings or attitude or whatever,
right?
At a certain point, it doesn't matter how he gets along with his teammates.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair to understand, but I think I've used this analogy a bunch of times. This is my third time using it. If you're in a relationship with somebody, person A is in a relationship with person B, and person B cheats on person A. When person A talks about why he's no longer with person B, he's going to mention, he or she is going to mention, hey, you know, they can mention, hey, bad attitude, some other things. But once they get to the reason of, oh, yeah, but I also was cheating on, that's going to be the biggest reason, and that's what we're all going to really focus on. Everything else is kind of filler stuff, right? Like, it came down to they owed him over almost $43 million. Mm-hmm. And over the next couple of years, they had to pay a lot of people. His capital was going to be $28 million. And he kind of wanted to get out in front of what their books were going to look like versus hold on to them for one more year. Yeah, I think if he was a better overall leader, because I don't think he promoted a toxic locker room. I think if he could have done a better job of holding guys more accountable and probably bringing more fire in that aspect. But he was more like, I'm going to do my job. I'm trying to uplift my other guys. That's about it. And I get it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I get his point of view on that aspect, and I also get D'Amico and them saying they kind of want a junkyard offensive line, which is fine. Like, I'm not going to knock them for that. But back to your original question, that's why I kind of always say, like, it wasn't a locker room problem. It wasn't any of those issues. It was really mainly about the cap and how much money he was owed. Like, I know we could talk about all these other things because, like, those things sell and those things stick and those things are easier and more juicy to talk about. It's easier to say, oh, well, Laramie, you know, they want to get a new culture and that's why they got Laramie out of there. That's a sexier topic, and that's easier for people to wrap their hands around, and that's better discussion and better discourse versus saying, oh, they just moved off of him 1 year early because he's one by the 31, captured of almost 30. Rather do that versus rather get rid of him now, because if you wait till next year, you're going to have to extend him, or the cap hit is going to be whatever it is. So that they just let you know they were never going to extend him again. So they just got out in front of it, and as simple as that. But I get it. It is easier, not easier. It is a better talking point when we focus on the quote unquote culture of the lot. To be honest, if the offensive line room was actually as toxic as some, you know, national reporters classified it as, they might have played better. Because there might have been more, you know, more attitude to an extent, in my opinion. But it was they were all kind of going through the motions to an extent. I can say that, you know, because Chris Schuster didn't set a standard. So it really started with the coaches down. And unfortunately, Laramie, you know, they wanted Laramie to kind of lead, you know, lead a little bit more in that aspect. But Laramie's more, he wants a guy that's going to coach him. He doesn't want to be doing coach himself. He wants someone that's going to coach him to be on his butt. And obviously, Chris Schuster wasn't that. So that lets you know the type of personality he has, that he just wants to be coached hard. But he's not going to necessarily translate that to others and, like, hold other guys overly accountable and things of that nature. But again, like, with an O-line, I mean, the O-line coach got to set that standard, you know? So that's why I go back to my point of it was way more about the financial ramifications, not the idea that he wasn't a culture setter. Because he was a captain multiple times.
Well, I'd love to see a stat on just how many drives he killed with penalties. That'd be...
that's a fair one. To be fair to him, though, most of them were in the beginning of the season, and after the beginning of the season, he kind of chilled out on that. But there are penalties across the board with everybody. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're penalties across the board with everybody.
Oh, yeah.
So,
It seems like his were the most ill-timed and stood out the most. But
yeah, the Vikings game was nasty.
Boy. Yeah. But speaking of the Vikings, let me ask you a question, DJ. I see Cam Robinson is out there. Is this just out of the realm of possibility that the Texans are – there's, you know, he's out there. There's still a couple of decently good O-linemen left and, you know, some decent receivers left. Are they done? Is this just not they're not going to be adding any more decently qualified free agents to this squad? Can we expect them to be done?
If you bring in, like, Cam Robinson – the only thing is he can command, like, you know, 8 figures. So that's like at the bare minimum 10. And so he do tight end, you put him on left guard. You know what I'm saying? Like, they obviously want to play left tackle. He's making average left tackle money, but he's making, like, top of the end left guard money, you know? So I think they kind of showed you what their plans are, because they still have juice I mean, obviously, they're going to be moving on a low-end bargain. That's what one of the guys in the building told me. Because like, they're not necessarily money strapped, but they went all in last year. So that's why they don't have much money left over. Like, they restructured some deals, so they got some cap hits that's hitting this year. Like, for example, Stephon Diggs' contract, since they added void years, they're still, even though he's not going to be on the roster, they're still getting hit for that. You know, I think it's like $16 million. You know what I mean? So they're just kind of strapped on money or tight on money. So they can't necessarily be big spenders or big, you know, big players into free agency. So I think, in all honesty, I mean, it'd be more low bargaining stuff. Because, again, like, you don't want to go shopping mainly to improve the O-line in free agency. You kind of want to hit on the draft and really knock it out the park there. Because then you got those guys that cost effective contracts while you have to pay CJ Will and Stingley. Possibly Nico again, and if you want to extend Daniil or whatever, or you want to bring Daniil back next year. So they kind of need to hit on some of these picks. And again, like, I think Titus, his contract's up. I don't think next year, but the year after that. And they might want to get out of this deal next year. So you might need a left tackle of the future
I honestly thought they were going to get out of it this year. I thought that they were going to try and get out. That's why they drafted Fisher.
Right, exactly. So, like, you kind of do at a certain point want to get young and cheap on the O line, because you got to get young and cheap somewhere.
Yeah, well, that seems like the wrong place to do that. But
and his track record is terrible. His track record drafting offensive linemen ain't great. As good as he's been with receivers and secondary guys, that's why I was hoping the late first round pick would be Egbuke or someone that's a wide receiver that could fill Tank's role.
Well, yeah. Go ahead, DJ. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Joel. I mean, I don't, you know, it's unfortunate that they're in this position, but, you know, that's why you got to hit on, that's why you got to hope that Blake Fisher comes along and Juice Grubbs comes along. And, you know, missing on Kenyon Green is tough, you know, because Kenyon Green lives up to his billing, and let's say Juice lived up to his billing, you moving off of Laramie wouldn't even matter that much, right? It wouldn't matter that much at all, because you'd have a stalwart interior offensive line, and you can just kind of like patchwork it all on the, I guess, left tackle and right tackle, or just be solid there. But since, like, you know, basically, there's nobody on the O-line you can even say, like, had a good year last year. Like, especially now that Delaney is gone, there's no way you can say had a good year. I think Titus was solid, had some, you know, bonehead moments, obviously, like whether it was falling against Green Bay or strip sacking CJ. But, yeah, so, I mean, it's unfortunate that they're in this position to where, like, they kind of get pitted into having to draft an offensive lineman versus, like, as you were saying, getting a receiver.
One of the things, though, that and the reason I asked about Robinson and you know, et al. Is because what I feel like I'm noticing Caserio do is it almost feels like it's the Astros formula. As he's really not locking into anybody long term. He's doing 1 and 2 year deals. I mean, you saw when he brought in Diggs, he reworked the deal and made it a 1 year deal. And it just seems like a lot of the stuff he's doing is short term. Hey man, if we can't win, you know, with you in a year or two, well, you might not be here. Which feels very, you know, like you mentioned, New England-ish. But
yeah,
that's why it felt like, well, you know, if you brought him in for a year and just kick the tires on him and see, or anybody else, that might make sense because it only has to be a year. And maybe that's true for receivers or anybody else where they need help. But I don't know. The flip side is, you know, you've got to spend the money. You got to have the money to spend the money. And like you said, they don't really have much. So,
Right. And again, like at this point, you know, you want to kind of hit on a draft.
Mm-hmm.
Just so, like, because you get, say, you find a stud in the first round on offensive line, now you got him cost effective for 5 years.
Yeah.
Versus if you get a Cam Robinson, let's say he plays right out, you got to pay him, let him walk, and you right back where you started.
Hey, DJ, we always appreciate it, man, especially in the offseason. But there was no one better than you that I wanted to talk to watching your Twitter and knowing what you know about this team. So thanks for spending some time with us. Have a great weekend. We'll catch up soon.
No problem.
There you go. DJ Bienname, the beat writer for your Houston Texans on ESPN.com. Always appreciate him stopping in. We got plenty more to get to on the show. BMAC will rejoin us, and we will have a lot more fun and games going forward, get some feedback on and some kind of further discussion of what DJ had to say, because it's interesting based on what I was thinking the Texans were thinking. So that and plenty more to get to. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
No Branham today, as he's got other duties to attend to with the Cougs.
Wow, wow, wow.
No? No. But yes, we want the Cougs to win. BMAC is here as he is diligently watching his horns.
Uh-oh.
Against Tennessee, down a touchdown early. And we just got done with DJ Bienname after having Kelly Eco on to talk Rockets. DJ, I wanted to have him on because he had so much to say all week in terms of that Tunsil aspect, because you hear, and he alluded it too, the national reports now are out there without citing specifics, saying that the O-line room was borderline toxic and basically pointing a lot of fingers. And then DJ, who's in there every day, was kind of defending Tunsil, saying the guys liked him. But I've been in locker rooms, albeit in a different sport, where you can have a guy that everybody else on the team really likes, but he doesn't jive with the coaches, or he doesn't go along with the way they're being coached. And so at a certain point, you decide to move on. And in this case, that's the vibe I got, was they waited till the offseason, and now also the finances too, but just decided, hey, we're going to move on from this.
I remember who it was. It was LZ. Lance.
What about him?
He said, I saw a tweet from him.
Well, there were some articles
that
too.
Said it's about culture.
He did say that, but I'm saying there were some articles, and it wasn't Garofalo, but it was somebody that was writing the article. That I'll look it up.
I wouldn't be surprised if they got that from Lance or took it and run with it, because that's how some of those cats do, is they'll see somebody like Lance, who they know to be an authority, and, you know them, to especially locally, mm-hmm. and then they'll take something like that and run with it and maybe get some quote-unquote inside sources to give them information, and then whether the information is good or not, then they'll run with it, even though, you know, they don't go to Lance necessarily for the info or whoever. So I don't know. It's and I'm not suggesting that Lance is incorrect. I'm just saying that's what I saw, and it made sense, because when it happened, it was like it was a shock to everybody, right? Mm-hmm. But it was like, look, in trying to make sense of it all, my first thought was something is going on, something has happened, or they have a plan. There's got to be a reason. You don't just do this. They're not dumb. Nick Caserio's not dumb. D'Amico Ryans isn't dumb. This team, this is not a Bill O'Brien thing. And that's what I said, is this is not that team, right? This isn't a Bill O'Brien shooting from the hip. Hey, I'll just send you DeAndre Hopkins for whatever's in your left pocket. Yeah, it's not. This isn't that, right? This isn't those kinds of moves, because that's what Bill O'Brien did. He operated in a vacuum. He would do one move by itself, and then he would do another move, and none of it made sense. I don't believe that's how this team operates now. They have a plan. They have a big board, and they look at it, and they whether that stuff works or not is kind of, you know, you might get, you know, it might work, it might not, but at least they have a plan this time around. And one of the things that I mentioned, or that I thought about, was I used actually a hockey reference in as part of this, and DJ talked a little bit about it, and it was contractually, Tunsil had 2 years left on his deal, mm-hmm. right? He had this coming year and then next year, which means he's going to want one more contract. Well, if you think about it, he's what, 31? So he's going to go into his final year of, you know, contract negotiations at 33, wanting one more deal, still thinking he's an elite, you know, left guard or left tackle in the NFL. And at that point, you're kind of stuck, because going into his final year, you're not going to be able to trade the dude, because nobody's going to want an aging left tackle that's on his last year of his contract, where they know you're going to have to overpay. So really, this is what happened to the Toronto Maple Leafs with a dude named Marner. I forget his first name. His last name is Marner, but it basically happened where 2 years left in his deal, they had like 6 months to either trade him or not, and then his no trade clause kicked in. They didn't trade him. Now they can't, and he doesn't want to be traded. They're stuck with him, and they couldn't negotiate a deal with him, so he basically walked in free agency. We saw the Astros do this with Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman on two different ends of the spectrum. They got nothing for Alex Bregman, and he walked. They decided, we're not going to let this happen with Kyle Tucker, and they moved on early. And in my mind, that's what basically this Laremy Tunsil deal boiled down to. DJ said it was a salary cap move. That's probably true. In my mind, though, this was also, we got to get something for Laremy Tunsil, because Bill O'Brien screwed us so bad as an organization getting him, that if he walks 2 years from now, or we can't trade him next year at the deadline, or the following year at the deadline, we're screwed. And his value is not going up.
Doesn't matter, Brian.
I mean,
it's not going up, it's going down, right? He's never going to have more value than he does right now.
Yeah, but also, I think there is something to it, and that's why I brought it up with DJ. I believe that we already knew, and Lance had reported about the fact that you basically had to bribe him 2 years ago, or a couple years ago, to play when they were out of the playoffs with a thumb injury that should have been a couple of weeks. He was 10 weeks into it, and they had to bribe him to get back on the practice field. You know, Jeremy highlighted the fact that he didn't even go over and pick up his quarterback when CJ got knocked down and everybody was coming to his defense. Like, there's been too many times that you've pointed a finger and said, what is this guy doing for being one of the highest paid left tackles, supposedly one of the best left tackles in the game? And at a certain point, when he had all the penalties, including the 8-game penalty, when they went to him, he wouldn't own it at first. He basically was deflective to say it was communication. It's a cohesiveness amongst the group. Own it, dude.
You had
8 penalties.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like, okay, we're not going to do anything mid-season, especially because there was already so much being pointed at, rightfully so, the offensive line. But at a certain point at the end of the year, you already know in your heart of hearts, this ain't working and it's not worth doing for another season. So for all of the above, it's time for all of us to move in another direction.
Yeah, but I still think, I mean, even if that were not the, like, even if that were, and I don't disagree with you, but at 31, and with that, this was the best time to get out. Wouldn't you agree?
I mean, look, the number was high no matter what. So I think as long as there's still multiple years on the deal, especially because of the fact that, I mean, look, he was the number one target of the entire fan base.
Because
everybody, when they heard offensive line, Tunsil sucks. Everybody, when they heard penalties, Tunsil sucks.
Well, Kenyon Green was the number one.
Right, but I'm just saying, no one was going to be heartbroken if you moved on from Laremy Tunsil.
No, but I mean, if you think about it, even at the deadline next season, you weren't going to get as much as you probably could right now. Because teams were in, like, oh, you know, they, like the Commanders, for example, they know that what he's capable of, and they know what they need. And I just felt like, look, it was kind of the perfect storm. The problem is, and this is where I'm kind of half saying it and half crossing my fingers, what is the plan? I hope they have a plan, and maybe it is just moving up in the draft, and maybe it is drafting the left tackle of the future, and some of it, we didn't really talk about it with DJ, but you know, they paid Titus Howard like a left tackle. They drafted him to be a left tackle. So you know what? It's kind of time to earn your money. Go be a left tackle.
But didn't they also do the same thing with Fisher? Like, they drafted Fisher to be the heir apparent, whether it be to Howard or to Tunsil. And now a year in, do you feel comfortable and confident that he's capable and ready to take over either position?
Well, not left tackle, that's for sure.
See, that's what I'm saying.
But I'd feel more comfortable with Titus Howard at left tackle than I would Fisher, that's for sure. I mean, I think Titus Howard right now is the best offensive lineman you have.
I think you're right.
So he's got to be your left tackle.
Well, what is that saying? Because you're already the third worst offensive line in the league. Now you didn't get better. You may get worse. We're hopeful that they improve it before they start training camp in the regular season.
Yeah.
But what we don't know is
here's the thing.
How they plan on doing that. Like you said, they have to have a plan.
You didn't get better. You got worse. But how much worse could you have gotten if you're the third worst in the league? That's I think, what their thought process is. If we're one of the three worst lines in football and we're paying this much money to Laremy Tunsil, how bad is it if we get rid of him?
Albert Breer, Monday Morning Quarterback, was the one that wrote about the borderline toxic offensive line room that sparked the Texans' overhaul and trades, including Laremy Tunsil. That's the one that DJ was kind of countering.
I mean, if you think about it, this is the same line 2 years ago, or 2 years prior, or a year prior from last season, that was just a mash unit, right? It was, I think,
musical
they had
chairs,
the most
right?
combinations of starting fives of any team in the NFL 2 years ago, and with a rookie QB that barely got sacked, you know, relatively speaking.
Well, Kendrick Green just signed, so he can't be walking back in your door, Barry.
Dang it!
Yeah, he's gone.
But I mean, like, what happened? How did this old line get worse? Something. Was it play calling? Was it coaching?
Now I just want to know how it gets better, because I still don't know. I think, to your point, we all want to believe that there's a plan. I stand true to what I said about I don't trust Nick drafting offensive linemen, because Patterson in the sixth round turned out to be better than we thought, but he was a sixth round pick. Juice Scruggs was drafted, according to many people that we've talked to and I've talked to, was drafted higher than he should have been, and he hasn't been as good as they thought he was going to be. And Kenyon Green is an absolute bust to this point in his career.
100%. Well,
So I don't trust Nick Caserio to draft linemen.
Well, I tell you what, one of the deckheads, Tony, had a great idea. And too bad Bobby Slowick's not here anymore, because I think what you could do is take a page out of Bobby Slowick's book and just use Tank Dell to block.
All right, we got a lot of people that want to line up and get in here on a variety of this conversation. So we got a full board. We're going to get to that at the top of the hour. Barry, it's all because of you. I want to get B-Mac's thoughts on his big offensive lineman from Texas again and the possibility that he might be an answer they're looking for, but you can't guarantee he's going to be there. Lots more to get to. Final hour of the show. It's Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.